Hello, everyone, and welcome to On Wednesdays We Watch One Tree Hill, the podcast where a bunch of nostalgic millennials sit around and talk about a TV show from the early 2000s that they either grew up with or have never seen before in their entire lives. As always, I am one of your co-hosts, Brody, and with me, as always, is Jesse.
Hi.
And Caitlin.
Hello.
And
I feel
today,
like we were in a fever dream.
Yes. Yes, we were. It's fine. Well,
Caitlin, you have your 1940s filter on.
You do.
Okay. My camera started doing that recently and I don't know why.
Okay. Well, it's kismet. It's fine.
Caitlin's in Casablanca right now.
Yeah. Yes, she is.
Caitlin transported herself back to the 1940s?
Yes, correct. 1940s.
When this episode takes place?
Oh, God. Anyway, yes, we are talking about season 6, episode 11 of One Tree Hill, titled We Three, My Echo, My Shadow, and Me, which, fun fact, is a song by the Ink Spots. Good for them. Don't know who they are.
And
moving
fact,
on swiftly.
This episode was written by Chad Michael Murray.
He wrote it? I thought he directed it.
He wrote this hot, steaming shit pile of an episode.
He is a wonderful, talented actor and an okay writer.
Oh, sorry. I thought that was a joke.
Well, I mean, it kind of was, because the punchline was he's an okay writer. It's fine. Anyway, shall we just get started with this fever dream of bullshit that's here? Because I'll just say this. I remember this episode with such fondness from when I first watched it. I remember this being like one of my favorite episodes of this season. I remember because it was so cool and the music and everything. And watching it today, I just went, this is awful.
Let me tell you something. This would have been my favorite episode of season 4, where it belongs. This has nothing to do with season 6.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, it's fine. So anyway, we open on a dark and stormy night where Lucas is watching Casablanca, which, fun fact for you young children, is a movie from the 1940s. Great. Cool. Lucas is going through the script for the movie and gets a phone call from Peyton. He tells her he's, reading over the script and he's reminiscing about them all in high school, you know, and he's also resisting the urge to beat the crap out of Julian. Great. Yes. He also comments on this random ass dove necklace that Peyton has on the dresser. And she explains that her father got her when he was out at sea one time. Great. Cool. They hang up the phone and he is watching TV and it immediately flashes to Tree Hill City in the 1940s in this glamorous nightclub called Karen's Cafe.
Ooh.
Yes.
I did love the cafe set. I'm not going to lie.
Oh, it's gorgeous.
Oh, it was beautiful.
Yeah. No, it looked stunning.
It was immaculately set, immaculately dressed. The music was good.
The writing and the acting is what's needed to be improved. And I'm sorry, it just didn't work. It's fine. Anyway, I love you all. I love you all. But oh boy. Yeah.
It was rough.
It was real rough. Well, yes. Yes. So we see Lucas walk in and we find out that Lucas is the owner of Karen's Cafe. And he walks past and we see Mouth, Fergie, and Junk drinking at the club. Mouth is a columnist for a newspaper. He says he's got a big scoop that's going to shake up the whole town.
He's a gossip columnist.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yes.
A drunk one, which is on brand for a gossip columnist.
Yes, yes. Then we see Skills, who is the piano player, and he's playing the piano very badly.
He's Sam, for those Casablanca fans out there. Yep. He's our Sam.
Yep. No, and he's not playing the piano badly because the recording is just fine. His acting of playing the piano was horrendous.
Yeah.
It was bad.
Antoine had never seen a piano before this episode was filmed.
Nope, not at all. Not at all. He'd never sat at one in his life. It's fine.
No.
Then we see Brooke Davis is at the bar and she talks to Lucas. And of course, she has money and men problems. And she says Lucas can help her with both of them. Lucas says he just inherited Karen's Cafe from his mother and it's all the lady that he needs in his life. Great.
Attaboy.
As he walks down the bar, we see that Nathan Scott is a bartender at the club. And apparently he's leaving his job, though, for some reason. We don't know why. He's also very concerned that Haley isn't on stage yet. Yes. We then see Haley backstage getting ready when she's interrupted by one smarmy-ass Dan Scott.
God.
The smarmiest of smarmy bullshit. It's so bad. It's so bad.
Something I noticed throughout this episode, he is just always just like damp. Uh-huh. Like Yeah. You know, there's like a matte complexion, there's a dewy complexion, and then there's whatever they did to Paul Johansson's face, where he is just constantly like a little sweaty through the entire episode.
Yep. Yep. Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird thing. But we find out that Dan is the owner of the Comet Club, which apparently, according to Haley, is a hellhole. And she rejects his request to come back to the Comet Club and his advances, where he even just kisses her, which is oddly really gross.
Yikes.
Yeah, but she slaps him and tells him to get out, and so he does. But then we cut to a few minutes later where Haley gets on stage and sings a song about Karen's Cafe called Karen's Cafe.
That
and it's
has
a great song.
It only has one verse that just gets repeated all the time.
Yep.
And for whatever reason, she takes one of her opera gloves off to perform it.
Yes. Yes, she does.
Just one. It bothered me so much.
Can I tell you what, though? One thing that I will say is that, and I don't know what it is, but like Joy Lentz just has, she has like an old Hollywood face.
Yes. Yes.
And she looks like she should have been alive
in
when Casablanca was made.
This is something I was going to bring up after we meet Peyton in this era, because there are actors. I watch a lot of period dramas, so this is a phenomenon I have noticed before, but it was so stark in this episode. There are actors who, oh boy, they can pull off vintage period clothing. Joy, James Lafferty. Dear God, that man looks good. Chad Michael Murray, he takes his hat off. He looks like he's in a James Bond film. Mm-hmm. Like, and then Hillary Burton comes in. Peyton comes in, and it's like, oh, she's in a Halloween costume. Yeah. Like, Hillary Burton is a modern actor.
Yeah.
She, yeah. It's so,
and it's same with Sophia, because Brooke just seems a little out of place in all of it as well.
I think,
but
she looks vampy. She can pull off the like femme fatale thing she's got going on. But Peyton looked so out of time in this episode. It was so weird.
Yeah. But yes, while Haley's
Chad look younger.
Yeah, it did.
And I will talk about the exact moment where I thought that later, but there was a moment when I was like, you look like you're 17.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So while Haley is performing, Lucas and Nathan are discussing her, and Nathan asks if a girl like her would ever go for, quote, a bartender like him. And Lucas says, I don't see why not. Great. Then Dan comes into the front door of the club, apparently, because just sneaking in the back was just the first thing he was going to do, apparently. And he comes in the club with Peyton and his henchman, Julian. They run people out of their table. And then Dan runs into Brooke, who reminds her that she has debts that need repaid. But she claims she has something in the works, but has to keep up appearances, which is why she's running up such a high bar tab. And he threatens her, saying her appearances will suffer if he doesn't get his money. Great. Then Lucas approaches Dan, and Dan goads him about Haley working at Karen's Cafe now instead of his club, and threatens him if he doesn't give Haley back to him. Dan then also comments on his past history with Karen and how she left after Keith's accident. Lucas then demands that they leave while Julian breaks a bottle to fight him in the most awkward, stupid thing ever.
So fucking funny.
It's so bad. Just he says on a bam bottle,
right? It's, yeah,
I can't. But then what's even better is after Julian does it, immediately police officer Owen shows up and tells Dan that that's enough and they need to leave.
Get it, Owen.
Oh my god. Yeah. And as they're
just
leaving
this episode, don't get it anywhere else.
No, but
it's good in the uniform.
Yes, but as they're leaving, Peyton's looking back, and Lucas is just giving the extra broody stare in her direction.
Yeah.
Extra broody. Yes, yes. And as the club just stands there in silence because, you know, someone broke a bottle and everyone freaked out, he offers to buy the club around on the house. It's fine. Great. Cool, cool. Everyone's happy. Great. Moving on. Yeah. Then after Haley's performance, she comes by the bar and is harassed by a drunk patron. Nathan intervenes by hitting the guy on the head and knocking him out.
That was the funniest part of this episode. Not the sexual assault, you know, that was happening like in progress in front of the bar, but Nathan grabbing this guy's head and smashing it into the bar and like moving on like nothing happened.
Yes, like he has to do that every night. It's fine.
Right. Yeah.
But yes, so Haley recommends that he cut the guy off, but Nathan says in the most smoothest way possible that maybe he should get him a drink on the house for giving him an excuse to talk to her.
Yikes.
Oh, yeah. Then Haley says, well, maybe it should be two drinks. The second one from her.
Ooh. Oh. They flirting.
Yes. Then Julian drives Dan and Peyton home, and we find out Peyton is Dan's surrogate daughter, having told her mother that he would look after her. He's not thrilled that she was making eyes at Lucas. And when she says she wasn't, he grabs her arm and threatens her and says, don't tell me that I'm wrong. A la like normal Dan. It's fine.
Yep.
Was this the year that the Sweeney Todd movie came out?
Oh, it might have been.
God, who knows?
So it has some like Joanna vibes.
Yeah. Right? A little bit. Joanna and the villain of Sweeney Todd is this.
Yeah. Right.
Isn't Todd the villain of Sweeney Todd?
Okay. Well, but you know what I'm talking about though. I'm not talking about Sweeney Todd. I'm talking about the other guy.
Yeah. The judge. The judge.
Yes. Alan Rickman.
Alan Rickman. God rest his soul.
Rest in peace. You never mind. He's not in this show. This show would be better if he was in this show.
I don't know if he could even save this episode. It's fine.
No, I didn't say this episode.
Okay, hold on. Hear me out. Alan Rickman is Dan Scott, though.
Oh, dear God. I wish I could do an impression because in my brain I'm hearing Alan say, you must dribble harder, Nathan.
Right, but in the most like monotone Snape, like page 394 quote version. Yes.
You'll never make the all-star team like that, Nathan.
Oh, my God. Oh, dear God. Okay. Moving on.
Alan Rickman, we miss you.
Yes, we do. Yes, we do. So she leaves Dan's car, and Julian says he knows that she wasn't lying to Dan because she only has eyes for him, and he slaps her ass. He's gross. It's fine.
Yuck.
It's gross. It's really gross. Then back at Karen's cafe, Mouth stumbles out of the club after having a few too many, and he passes out around the corner in the alley.
This is also very funny.
Mouth is great this episode.
And also very season four, because... is this not, does Mouth not find out that somebody's pregnant because he passed out on a bench at Rachel's house?
That's yes.
Very true.
Absolutely.
Dear God.
I'm telling you, this is my favorite episode of season four.
God. Yes. And then Brooke leaves the club and Lucas bids her a good evening and tells her that, yes, they had good times before. And as she leaves, Skills comes up and says, you know, you let her leave without paying her bar tab. And he just rips it up and says, you know, she's going through hard times, but Brooke Davis is going to change the world someday. Where have you heard that before?
I've never heard it. I don't know. Really
God. So she goes to get a taxi, but realizes she doesn't even have enough money to pay for the taxi. So she walks home and ends up giving the last coin that she has in her coin purse to a homeless man.
Yes.
Yeah. Great. She ends up encountering Dan on the way home, and she tells him the money she borrowed was to start her own garment line, but it's been slow. And she needs more time, you know, to build up interest. And he gives her till tomorrow to pay up. And as she leaves, Julian asks if he wants him to rough her up for him. But he says, no, give her till tomorrow. But I do want to see that cop for embarrassing me. I want to hit something. And Mouth, who is still sort of passed out in the alley, overhears all of this. Great.
I feel like I did not know Julian well enough to care that he was in this episode. Like, let alone, you know, recognize him when he walked in that suit and hat.
Yeah. Okay. Then at the closed cafe, Haley and Nathan talk, she tells him that she moved to Tree Hill City because it rains here all the time and it feels like home to her that way. And Nathan tells her about how Karen left the club to Lucas after Keith's accident, and that he knows that she'd be proud that Haley was the kind of girl who was working there. And Nathan then asks if she would go out with him sometime, but she says that she should just, or he asks, would it be okay if he asked her out? And Haley says, well, you'll never know if you should just ask me. And Lucas then interrupts him and gives Nathan a letter from the U.S. Army. So that we find out that's why Nathan is leaving. It's because he's, yeah, being deployed. Nathan returns.
War time.
Yes, it is. But Nathan returns and immediately just asks Haley out. And she accepts. Great.
Good.
Yes. Then Peyton comes into Karen's cafe saying her car broke down outside and Dan isn't with her at all. And Lucas offers to fix it, even though he's not the mechanic type.
Okay.
Dear God.
Okay, buddy.
Yep. He ends up, he can't fix it and instead walks her home at her request. And we see that Peyton actually vandalized her own car to in front of the cafe to talk to Lucas. Great. Cool. As they're walking, she asks Lucas if he thinks she's pretty, but he says he doesn't know her well enough yet to say that. And it forces Peyton to try to get to know him better. And he asks her why she associates herself with Dan. She tells him about how Dan and her mother fell in love and that she died and he promised he'd look after her. And Lucas just tells her that she seems like she's just a trinket for Dan. And Peyton then admits to him that she needs to get out from under Dan and be free and live her own life.
Yeah.
So weird.
All of them. Yeah. Okay.
It's just weird. Yeah.
I'm realizing something that I will circle back to in our recap.
Okay. Great. Yeah. Then we go back to Nathan and Haley, who Haley's recognizing the fact of, you know, oh, yes, we said we were going to go out, but we're staying right here at the cafe. And he's like, why not? It's got the best piano player. It's got the best singer. And she's like the best bartender. And they flirt some more and Nathan tells her about the letter from the Army and that he has to report for duty tomorrow. He tells her it's his last night, but he wouldn't want to spend it with anyone else. Haley asks him if that's the truth because she wants to believe it is. He confirms it for her and they smoochy smooch.
Smooch, 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 smooch.
Yes. Then Peyton and Lucas are walking home. And she tells him again how she wants to be free and make her own decisions. She admits she came to see him tonight because he was the first thing she's laid eyes on that is different and free from Dan. Lucas finally tells her that she's pretty, but it's her heart that makes her beautiful. Right.
Sorry.
And she makes, I know. It's fine. She makes him promise not to say anything about Peyton's mother, as that's kind of a secret. I don't know how it is, but okay, great. And Dan, and he tells her about, how he has a sign that says people always leave, but he says, come stay a while and have a nightcap or whatever the hell it said. It was awful.
Yeah.
It was so bad. Then they kiss. And they bid each other good night. And as they go their separate ways, we find out Brooke Davis was watching them the entire time from a distance.
Dun, dun.
I just, this episode. Oh my God.
We can just get through it. Then we can bash. Yep, just I know. It's fine. It's okay. Fine. It's fine. It's fine. Nathan and Haley are sitting at a park on their date that is still going on into the daytime.
It's the next day. I was going to say, the sun is out now.
Yeah, it's the next day. It's the next day. And she asks him what he's thinking. And he says he loves her and he's not afraid of dying, but he's afraid of dying without telling her how he feels. She then tells him she has a crazy idea and asks if he trusts her. And he says, yes, he does. Great. Yep, great. Great. The only good parts of this episode. It's fine.
Yep. It's true.
Yep. Then Brooke goes to see Dan as he is literally sitting at a checkered table, scarfing down spaghetti like the most.
In a warehouse.
Yes.
In a warehouse.
It's just so bad.
And this is where he is peak moisture.
Oh, yes. No, he is balmy.
He is sweating into that plate of spaghetti.
Yes. Yes. Yeah, it's so gross. But Brooke offers him information about Lucas and Peyton in exchange for him to forgive her debt. And he says, no, you're going to tell me what it is, and then I might forgive your debt. She tells him about how she saw them kissing, and he tells her that she's a liar, and he says, get her out of here. And as she's walking away, she tells him about how he loved Peyton's mother, which is the proof enough for him to realize that she's telling the truth. And it convinces him to forgive her debt after she does just one more thing for him. Dun, dun, dun. Great. Skills, poor bastards, leaving the club, and Julian offers him a ride. Skills refuses, and for that, they shove his hand in a car door and smash it to smash his hands. Because what good is a piano player with smashed hands?
Yep. I will say, Skills looks great in vintage clothes.
Yes.
Agreed. Skills can pull them off.
Yes. Yep. So can Mouth.
Yes. Mouth looks so good in his fucking little pork pie hat and his white ass tie. I'm like, dear God, this man was made for 1940s clothes.
The men all look really good. It's the girls that it's without, like, it's,
except for Lucas.
Yes. Yes. Then Peyton comes back to the cafe and she gives Lucas her dove pendant. And she tells a story about how her mother took her out on a boat one time and a sailor gave it to her as a reminder that one day she can be free to travel and live her own life.
Did you mention the dove pendant at the beginning of this episode?
Yes. Cause it's the most random, dumbest thing ever.
The most random. We've known these characters for 6 years now. Why have we never seen her wear this? Heard her talk about it. Where the fuck did this come from?
Because Chad Michael Murray wanted something like that in his episode that he wrote. It's fine. Anyway, moving on. We then see Dan is beating the crap out of Officer Owen, who is tied up to a chair. And he mocks him for not begging for his life and says it reminds him of when he did this to Keith.
And then who pops out from behind a barrel.
Yep. Yeah. As Dan is punching Officer Owen some more, which just sounds really bad. Like it's a bad Magic Mike act. Honestly, Officer Owen here. Come on. I know. Yep. Yep. There you go.
Me up.
I didn't even realize it was Owen at first. I'm not even kidding.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, but no, as he's beating the crap out of him, we do see, yes, Mouth pop up from behind a barrel. And as he goes to leave, he runs right into Julian. Poor Mouth.
Yep.
Poor Mouth. It then immediately cuts to them having a tied up and beaten Mouth being force-fed booze on the side of a bridge.
Why was the booze necessary? He's got cement blocks tied to his feet.
Right. His feet are literally in a barrel, bucket of cement.
Ask the writer. I don't know. Yes, but then we find out that Peyton followed them from the warehouse, and she's trying to stop them from hurting Mouth, and she finds out that, you know, Dan is evil. You know, she's always thought that he might be, but she never knew it. Now she knows that he is evil, and he slaps her and says, "Get in the car, bitch."
Yep.
Basically. Has she ever spent 5 minutes with him?
Right.
No one said this Peyton was bright. This Peyton has no personality except that she wants to be free and she vandalizes her own car. It's fine.
Yep.
That's her personality. It's fine.
I'll allow it.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes. And Mouth, says that he found out that Dan killed Keith, and Peyton questions him if it's true. And like you said, it totally is. Great. Cool. Then we go to Haley and Nathan, who are in bed together, where they are talking about what their future plans will be, where they're going to live and how many children they're going to have. And, you know, they talk about having a son and naming him James, like Haley James.
Oh,
great. Great. The only mention of the child, because Jamie is not in this episode.
No.
The poor thing was spared.
Well, he probably is. They just don't know it yet.
We got, this is the one flashback to the night of conception we get.
Yes, yes. And as they pan away from them, they pan to the nightstand where we see a marriage certificate signed. So they got married.
Cute.
Guess it doesn't matter what timeline or reality, Nathan and Haley are going to get married very, very early in their relationship.
I do love like conventions like that where it's like it doesn't matter what time these characters are in, they're gonna
do
each other.
They're gonna do the same shit.
They're so meant for each other that this garbage ass weird timeline, they also find each other and are the best part of.
Yes. Then we go back to Dan and Mouth, and he's holding Mouth over the side of the bridge and offers him one last chance, you know, to save himself. But, you know, Mouth refuses and they throw him off into the river and we never see him again.
Can we talk about the
spit?
Unnatural amount of spit that came out of Lee Norris's mouth?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because I'm sorry. That was not spit.
No.
That was
a water gun. That was a water gun.
Yeah. They filled his, you know, okay, like there, you know, when you go to this wine bar called Barcelona. I don't know if you guys have one in Minnesota or whatever, but anyway, so it's this wine bar called Barcelona. And basically what they do is they, instead of like doing shots, what they'll do is the servers will come to your table with this like weird, like carafe of wine that has a spout, and they will just pour wine directly into your mouth.
Oh, and sign me up. Yes.
No, I want to. I've never actually been. I've just seen videos of it, and I have friends that have been, and I'm like, I need to do this.
Yes.
But it literally, like, they took one of those, poured a bunch of water or Sprite. It had to be Sprite because it was foamy.
It was
foamy. Mouth was foaming at the mouth.
Yep.
And poured that into his mouth, said gurgle, and then now do this.
Yep. Yeah, it was a spit take. It was just, yeah, no.
It was a spit take, not a spit in the face.
Yeah, so they throw Mouth off the river and Mouth is gone. R.I.P. Mouth. And Julian tells Dan that...
floats down the river.
Yeah.
I know. No. And Peyton's gone. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. At the cafe, Skill shows Lucas his hand and Peyton bursts in and tells them about Dan having Mouth and how Dan killed Keith. So Lucas gets a gun from underneath the bar and asks Peyton if she was serious about leaving with him. And she says yes. So he turns to Skills and says, guess what? The cafe's yours, Skills. I'm leaving with this girl. Okay, great, bye. Immediately as they get out of the cafe, they are cornered in the middle of the street by Dan's goons in cars, and Julian tells Peyton to come over to him, and she refuses. He pulls a gun out, and Lucas shoots Julian, killing him.
Woohoo! Yay!
The most realistic part of this dream of Lucas's is him murdering Julian.
Yeah. Right?
Because
right?
Currently he would still like to.
Right. Dan comes out of the car and talks to Lucas and ends up turning his back on him because he says, you know, you won't shoot a man in the back. And it's just enough to distract him with, I'm also bringing Brooke Davis out of the car to get the jump on Lucas and pull his gun out on Lucas and have him drop his gun. He then instructs Brooke to shoot Peyton as her last action to, resolve her debt. And Brooke takes the gun out of Dan's hands and goes to shoot Peyton. But instead, she turns around and pulls the gun on Dan and tries to shoot him. But the gun has no ammo. He knew she was going to do this. So he just knocks her off to the side and goes to shoot Lucas with another gun. But Skills pushes Dan over as he fires the gun. The bullet inadvertently hits Peyton. And we see her fall to the ground and die in Lucas's arms.
Oh, God. Yep.
Yep. Then as Nathan is leaving for deployment, he tells Haley that he's going to come back for her. And she says she'll wait for him always and forever. He kisses her and says this was the best day of his life. And he gets on the plane for deployment.
To probably die.
Probably.
Correct.
Yes. Aww. Lucas is crying in the street over Peyton's body and gives her the dove pendant back, saying that she's free. And then his cell phone rings in his jacket pocket.
Yes. I'm not going to lie. When he gave her that dove pendant back and said, you're free now, Peyton. Ugh. I laughed. I honestly laughed.
It was so bad. It was so bad. So he answers the cell phone that's in his pocket in the 1940s, and it's Peyton. And we find out that, yes, this was entirely a dream of Lucas's. And Peyton apologizes for waking him up and says that she'll be home soon. He tells her he had the craziest dream, and he'll tell her about it when she gets home. He also asks her to never leave him, and she says she won't. But as they hang up the phone, Peyton gets a excruciating pain in her stomach and falls to the floor in pain, and the episode ends.
Oh, God damn it.
Uh-huh. So, what did we think, everybody?
So, I thought about this. Yeah. Yeah. First that. The second thing that I thought of was, okay, so the bridge where a large chunk of this episode occurred, this episode, I've been to that bridge. Mm-hmm. I've sat in the middle of that fucking bridge. Mm-hmm. It's in a residential area.
Yeah.
And all I could think about the entire time is because you know that they were out there filming that shit because of how dark it was. It was probably past midnight.
Oh, yeah.
You know the people. And granted, the people who live in that area had been dealing with this TV show using that bridge for quite some time now.
And not to mention Dawson's Creek before that.
And right. Exactly.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. Sorry. Dawson's Creek is filmed in this was in the filmed in the same town as One Tree Hill.
Yeah. But I feel like a lot of the time when, at least in One Tree Hill, when they film at this bridge, it's during the day.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be honest. If I lived in that area, I would have been mad as hell. if there were people outside filming at 3 o'clock in the morning.
Filming throwing a body off a bridge.
Losing his shit.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that was all I could think. And not only that, but it's like where the bridge is located, it's like to get to, at least from what I could tell, having driven around that area, like you have to go across that bridge to get to part of the neighborhood. And like, there's not another option.
Yeah.
So like, imagine getting that like notice on your door. That's like, hey, by the way, hope you don't have to go anywhere.
Yeah. Like, yep. Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, the only shot, I mean, one big scene there, and that was when they were, you know, with Mouth on the bridge. Cause the other scene is Lucas and Peyton just walking on the bridge.
And that was a green screen.
Yeah.
That was in studio. That was not.
This episode, I remember this episode when it first aired with such fondness, and then watching it now in the year of our Lord 2024, it's awful. It's so bad.
Could have seen myself also absolutely loving this shit when I was a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, we were 18, 19 years old when this was, you know, released, and it was like, oh God, yes. It was so cool. They all looked so good. Haley and the music was so good. Cause all of the music that's in there is all Haley, like all the background, it's all Haley. Cause there's a song that she wrote for the EP that Everly, the band she was in, was doing called Mrs. Scott. And that's what plays when she and Nathan are in that bed and got married. Like most of their scenes, it's under the song Mrs. Scott. So that part was really cool. It's just the rest of it is just so over the top bad.
Yeah. What I was realizing as we were talking is that, so Chad Michael Murray gets a writer credit. So I'm looking at this episode, only this episode's IMDb page. So he who must not be named has a writing credit because he's the creator, right? And then there's a person that's a story editor, but Chad Michael Murray is the writer of this episode.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't come up with a single, like, he took things that other people had written for the last 6 years and put a 1940s lens on it. He didn't write shit.
No.
Like, he didn't create anything. He did
1940s movie stereotypes.
Yeah.
Plastered our well-known characters into that and just used the old storylines from previous seasons.
Yeah.
To push the story. And there's no really new story except that Peyton dies.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
Which may or may not be foreshadowing.
Exactly.
Based on how the episode ended.
This is the episode ends. She's writhing on the floor in pain.
I hate this show. Oh my God. No. We did have a boyfriend hot take. I saw Mandy, the podcast number one fan, over New Year's, and she's like, there hasn't been enough boyfriend hot takes. So here you go, Mandy. Boyfriend hot take. Ben thinks that Chad Michael Murray leaned too hard into the Italian mob stereotypes for Dan.
I don't know if that's a hot take.
No, it's not.
I mean, was it the pencil mustache or the spaghetti ridden red and white checkered tablecloth in the middle of a warehouse?
It was
or the cement blocks on Mouth's feet.
Exactly.
No. Right. God, yeah, no, I think it was the sweaty spaghetti that, yeah.
Dan Scott and the sweaty spaghetti.
Yep, it's his, it's his 1940s swing band.
Yeah. That's who plays at the Comic Club now that Haley's not there.
Yep, absolutely. Sweaty spaghetti. That's why their club's always fucking empty, because the band sucks.
God.
Well, the band must suck if Dan's in it and he's never there.
Right? Yeah, no, it was entertaining to see Dan again, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, I don't know.
It's been a while since we've seen Dan, isn't it?
Yeah, not since Jamie condiment
crazy Carrie.
Yeah. Well,
it's Jamie been a couple episodes because, yeah.
Money for his economics lessons.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I mean, for us, it's been a while because we haven't watched some stuff in a while, but it's only been like a couple episodes, I think.
Yeah.
But it's. The idea of the episode is very cool. I just wish it had maybe been executed a little better as far as the dialogue, but it looked great. Visually, it was stunning.
Oh, yeah. No, and it...
Props to the... Yeah.
I also just think it comes at a weird time in the season because it's not like they've had this like culmination of big drama and they needed a break, right? It's not, yeah. We didn't need a breather. They just introduced a bunch of new drama that we haven't really dug into yet.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a weird time in the season. Yeah.
Well, and you can tell it's like also this thing of like, because this is the longest season they have. It's 24 episodes long.
Right.
And it's because of the fact of obviously season 5, they had the writer's strike. There were less episodes. So they gave a lot of shows like that for the next season more episodes to be like, tie up all your loose ends and do your shit. But it just feels like, yeah, the showrunners were like, well, what do we do with episode 10? Like, what do we do? What do we, or 11 or whatever it is, 10. And it's just like, let's do this. Let's have this. Yeah.
And this is why I some of my favorite TV shows of all time have these long seasons, oh, yeah. Right? Like, I'm still a Friends bitch. I understand it's like problematic and whatever, but I'm still a Friends bitch. But I am so anti 24, 23 episode seasons these days.
Yeah.
I'm like, they're not telling a story with all those episodes. Why do we need them? Yeah. You know, like, yeah. Mm-hmm. Like 13 episodes.
Well, and also you have to think of like you specifically cited Friends. Friends was a sitcom. So yeah, a 24 episode sitcom is an 11 episode full length show.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So
and most shows, I mean, it's, you know, and it's doable to do a long show like that because I go back to my BL end all, which is Buffy. The showrunners on that show were so much better at crafting an entire season long story arc and mystery that kept you entertained through the entire season with little small other stories contained in episodes.
Oh, sure.
This show doesn't do that nearly as well, but so it just seems like we've been in season 6 for a very, very long time already. And we're only in episode 10. Of 24.
Yeah.
So it, yeah.
No, yeah. I think
too, it's like, it's almost like they needed to introduce what happens in the last 30 seconds of the episode, which is Peyton writhing on the floor in pain.
Yes. Yeah.
And they were like, let's take a whole 40 minute episode of nothing just to lead to this specific point.
Yeah.
They could have had Peyton like discovering the pain at the USO concert. And like, we don't need this episode. This episode, right? Like you said, we need the last 30 seconds of this episode. Mm-hmm. And what I think you're getting at about like Buffy, that also has longer seasons, they are so much better at distributing the plot.
Yeah.
As opposed to plot heavy.
Nothing.
Nonsense romp. Yeah. Weird flashback episode with 30 seconds of plot. You know, like this show doesn't know how to
piece
spread
itself.
The peanut butter on the toast.
No,
it's
No, it's also trying to spread the peanut butter with like a, I don't know, a cheese grater.
Yeah. Yeah. Ugh.
Just a fork.
Also, I just double checked. This is episode 11, not episode 10.
Oh, is it? Okay.
Yep.
Great. Cool.
So it's almost that halfway point where we would get a culmination in the drama and then we need a breather. It's almost that.
Almost there.
But if this happened after the next episode, I think I could have justified it more.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which, and fun fact, the next episode is actually the mid-season finale.
Sure. Yeah.
So it makes more sense. It just, it feels very oddly placed. It's oddly written, like great for Chad for doing it. Like probably one of the first things he ever wrote. Good for you, man.
Star.
I've never written a television show before, so I don't have a lot of room to talk. But it's not a great episode of One Tree Hill.
No. Not a classic.
No.
Maybe a classic for the wrong reasons.
Yeah.
But
Yeah.
No, but I did see that written by Chad Michael Murray in those top credits. I'm like, oh, here we fucking go. I had no hopes, zero expectations of the quality of this.
Yeah. Yeah. So, Coolio, anything else we want to add about this wonderful episode before we wrap up?
I got nothing.
No? Okay, great. R.I.P. columnist mouth.
R.I.P. 1940s mouth and his pork pie hat.
Yes.
You will be missed.
Yes.
And R.I.P. the hopes of ever having Alan Rickman in our HBO reboot of One Tree Hill.
God. Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, that's going to do it for us, guys. Thank you so much for listening. As always, don't forget to like, rate, and subscribe to the podcast. It does help us out in the long run. Rate us 5 stars. Write us a good review. We would really, really appreciate it. Helps with all those lovely podcast algorithms. If you want to reach out to us and have any questions, comments, and or concerns, hit us up on Instagram in those DMs. That's where we live most often, at On Wednesdays Pod. And yeah, we will see you guys next week for another fun-filled episode, I'm sure, of On Wednesdays We Watch One Tree Hill. We'll see you guys next week. Bye.
Bye.